You're listening to Jedi and Germs, the weekly podcast brought to you by TornBySports.com and BlogTalkRadio.com. I'm John English, the Germs guy, and he's Devin Masters, the producer. Hello, Devin.
Hey, John. How you doing?
Pretty good. We are without Alan today, so the two of us will be plowing ahead because there's just been so much going on in this amazing NBA offseason.
Yeah.
And we usually start with the Jazz, but we kind of have to go over some of the other stuff that came down this week. Since we recorded, Kawhi Leonard became a Clipper. Paul George became a Clipper. Chris Paul became a member of the Thunder. Russell Westbrook became a member of the Rockets. And the Thunder now have 17 draft picks. So where do you want to start?
let's start with the first domino, because if it doesn't come down to Kawhi going to the Clippers, none of this happens. So it's really interesting to me how one person can affect so much of the NBA landscape, because you just saw a franchise completely go into rebuild mode, and I don't think anyone saw that coming.
No, and what's wild about the Thunder is they still have enough talent that they could get the eighth seed. They could wind up not being that much worse than they were last year. When you consider the chemistry issues, when you consider they've been first round exit three years in a row, they still have plenty of talent on that team. It's just going to be Chris Paul now. And who knows, maybe Chris Paul will get flipped to Miami. But when I look at the talent in the West, I still think it's more likely than not the Thunder are lost. But I think the Thunder are okay. When you have that many picks, and a lot of them are, you know, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6 years down the road, where the picks they got the teams from could be worse. You know, they got Clipper picks and they got Rocket picks. Who knows how good those teams will be in 3 or 4 years? You know, Kawhi only signed a 2-year deal. I mean, third year with player option, but you know he'll opt out of that. So I think it was smart in the picks that they got, and they could wind up being very valuable. And an unused first-round pick is valuable no matter where it is. So I give credit to Sam Presti for going ahead and hitting the reset button.
Absolutely. And as much as they got, you know, you saw the deal go down and you see they got, was it three picks from the Clippers for Paul George and then two swaps with that? Is that?
Yep.
And then you think, okay, they've got a haul. You know, that's a lot when you think about it. And then you go immediately and get even almost the same amount to deal Russ. I mean, it's just unbelievable how many picks they're going to have and all those swaps. They could really make some noise quickly in terms of doing a rebuild in a few years. And like you said, in the meantime, they still have Steven Adams. They get Chris Paul, who I think is maybe a better fit in terms of any team, just because, I don't know, Russ is that guy who's going to get you a triple-double every night. He's going to put points on the board, but I don't think you can win with that, can you?
So far, it hasn't borne out like that. You know, Russ playing his style with the team around him, they get their, you know, 48 wins every year. But then the playoffs comes, and it's just really easy to exploit. One thing Locke has been is that Russell Westbrook is one of the most inefficient players in the NBA. And his game relies solely on athleticism. So long term, you know, his contract is just going to get worse and worse. And, you know, then you had Houston, where you have Harden and you had Paul. You had chemistry issues. Reports came out they had chemistry issues. They all denied it, but it's like, all right, it was true. And yeah, the Jazz ran into them 2 years in a row and got eliminated by them. But once the Jazz got Mike Conley, my confidence soared that if they ran into the Rockets again, they'd be able to pass them. And when you also look how their supporting cast has dwindled a bit. Now I'm confident the Jazz can beat both teams in the playoffs more so. So I would say, you look at this trade, it made sense for both teams, and yet both teams still feel like first-round exits to me.
Right.
If they make the playoffs, if the Thunder even make the playoffs. Rockets make the playoffs, but I still feel confident Houston's a first-round exit this year.
And that was the thing. When the trade went down, the first thing I thought was, I don't know that either team got better from this. And you brought up the chemistry issues that Chris Paul and CP had, or sorry, that Chris Paul and James Harden had. I'm trying to figure out how James Harden and Russ coexist, because I know they've done it before, and I know it was fairly successful. You had Oklahoma City go to the NBA Finals and lose to a big three in Miami. But the fact is, you've got the two most ball dominant players in the league on the same team, and I don't feel like Russ gives you that same team involvement aspect that CP does, and I don't feel like he's as good of a shooter and as much of a threat in the outside perspective as what they've had. And for me, it's very similar to kind of what you did with LeBron in L.A. last year. LeBron needs shooters around him. That's what makes him dangerous, is when you space the floor. When you don't do that, you've got two guys now. It's kind of like Mitchell last year. Can you just clog the paint in terms of Russ and just stick out on Harden? I don't know how it's going to work. It'll be interesting to me. What do you think?
Yeah, I remember thinking, I didn't really know how it was going to work when Paul first joined the Rockets, and it seemed to work out okay as far as spacing went and staggering when the guys are actually on the floor together. I imagine the Rockets are going to do something similar. It sounds like Westbrook and Harden as people got along personally, but their games didn't necessarily mesh together. So I think the chemistry will be better between them, but actual on-court play, I'm really curious how that's going to work. Both of them are going to have to be off the ball more than what they're used to. They're both super ball dominant guards. So now how are you going to make that work? Now, Harden is still the better player than Westbrook at this point in their careers. So I imagine he would get it more, but you know, Westbrook's going to have to make some adjustments. And even when you look at the supporting cast for the Rockets, they still have the core, you know, starting lineup. They still have Capella, Gordon, PJ Tucker, and not a lot of anything else. You know, you got Austin Rivers is back, Green, even on here. Yeah, they're a very thin team, really. So I'm really curious how they're going to do it, because it's a team makeup where if they want to get 50 wins, then they're going to need 39 minutes a night from all the main guys.
Yeah, and like you said, they've gotten along better off the court, but I guess my concern comes down to, if this experiment doesn't go the way that they think it's going to, and you have two very different players now. Both players have an MVP trophy. Both players have a scoring title. You know, there's a lot of ego there that I don't think maybe was quite to that level when they were together in Oklahoma City. And so we'll see if things aren't working well off the court or on the court. I think off the court, you're going to start to see those issues, kind of like what happened with Chris Paul.
Yeah. I think a lot of us see this happening. But what I really think is going to happen is they're going to have a decent first year, and it's not really going to fall apart until their first round exit. And then we're going to start hearing murmurs and whisperings. Second year is going to be a lot more uncomfortable, and that's when you're going to see things pick up and like, oh man, what do the Rockets do now?
Right.
Because Morey is very good at finding assets he can then trade away from. And that's been working for a few years, but it feels like their long-term plans are based on a Jenga model. Once Harden's game starts going down, that's the end. Just blow it all up and rebuild. But that's like probably a good 3 years away.
Yeah, and that's about when Russ's contract hits that $47 million. So,
yeah.
We've talked a lot about what's happening in Houston, but I think we probably should give some attention to the battle in Los Angeles now. With the Clippers, how much of a threat are they adding Kawhi and Paul George?
They should finish top two in the West, probably top one, but let's wait a little bit and see how it all works out. But they are coming into a solid supporting. And I think that's part of the reason. Well, there are a few reasons Kawhi wanted the Clippers more than the Lakers. One, the Clippers had a better supporting cast already in place. Two, I don't think he really wanted to be the NBA villain who joins LeBron and Anthony Davis. Three, the Lakers just haven't been as well run. There's plenty. And yet, he really wanted to go home to LA. Paul George really wanted to go home to LA. And the two of them going here, you know, neither of them are villains who are going to the Clippers. And the whole NBA is that much more competitive. Lakers, I think, have a lot more question marks. LeBron's getting older. Now, he still averaged, I want to say, something like 27, 8, and 8 last year. So a slower LeBron is still an incredible LeBron. AD, you know, amazing player, but he has never stayed healthy all year in any season of his career. And there's just not a lot behind them. They filled out some decent, interesting pieces. I think they did a better job this year than they did last year in getting guys around. You know, they got Danny Green. DeMarcus Cousins is a question mark, but DeMarcus Cousins and Anthony Long in their time in New Orleans. So that could wind up really paying off. Jared Dudley's a decent, you know, tenth man glue guy. Kyle Kuzma, they managed to hold on to him. So they're looking a little better than they did last year. They don't have, you know, Lance Stevenson's gone. All their young guys are gone. All the other young guys are gone. So between the Lakers and Clippers, I think the Clippers are a better team. I think the coaching, you know what you're getting, and Doc Rivers is good when he has NBA talent behind him. And the egos aren't really as much. You know, Doc had to deal with Chris Griffin and DeAndre Jordan, and they didn't really like each other. And it seemed to be mainly Chris Paul. Clippers have a lot of likable guys on their team. They have a lot of guys with hustle. They have a lot of guys where that you can respect what they're doing. You know, Pat Beverly is going to be there. Lou Williams is still there. Montrezl Harrell is a really good defender. They brought Jamichael Green back. There's a lot of promising stuff on that team. And I think the Clippers, if anybody, is a left.
And I think when you look at this Clippers squad, I mean, they have three of the top 10, two of the top five defenders in the league. They're going to be a battle anyone they go up against, even if the offense isn't there. But again, you've got a two-time Finals MVP in Kawhi. You've got an MVP caliber player from last season in Paul George. You've got a two-time or three-time Sixth Man of the Year winner in Lou Williams. I think they're going to be good on both sides of the ball, don't you?
Yeah, they're a great team, and Locke did a podcast the other day where he was running his points game metric and how team offenses were going to be. And I can't remember exactly, but Clippers, they were either two or three offense. And you know their defense there. So I think Clippers probably going to be top five in both categories.
Now I want to ask you something here. You mentioned the contracts. Now, Kawhi has a two-year deal with a third-year player option. Paul George runs into the same thing on the same year. With everything that they gave away, could this go south for the Clippers in 2 years?
It could if panic moves. Although I wouldn't say Clippers are prone to panic moves. Because Kawhi, he'll be a free agent again in 2 years. You know, he won't pick up that player option. He'll be a free agent in 2 years. Paul George will be a free agent in 2 years. So they actually line up together. If they they will, between the two of them, have player options valued at like $73 million. They'll both decline to want to get longer term deals. They haven't won a championship in those 2 years. I would say Clippers are in a bit of precarious situation. I think if they win a championship, or if they at least go to the finals, then you would think both guys would want to sign longer term deals to make this work. But yes, it's a very crucial next 2 years for the Clippers. They are on the clock. Some teams are on the clock. Jazz are on the clock the next 2 years.
Yeah, that's very true. I mean, when you think about it, what LeBron does over the next 2 years, you know, if this doesn't work out for him in LA, what's he going to want to do? Clippers, Jazz, Rockets, we've talked a lot about. I'm trying to think of who else. The Nets have, I think, a third year because everyone signed a four-year deal. But, yeah, the next 2 or 3 years, we could see the whole NBA shake up again like it did this summer. And I don't know about you, but this has been a wild, wild NBA offseason. I don't recall ever seeing anything like this or even hearing about something like this since the league started.
Yeah, I'm pretty confident this is the most movement we've ever seen in the offseason. When you think about just the top guys we've talked about, you list the best players in the NBA. And Durant, Kawhi moved, Paul George moved, Russell Westbrook moved, Chris Paul moved, Kyrie Irving moved, Al Horford moved, Conley moved.
Jimmy Butler moved, AD moved.
Jimmy Butler.
D'Angelo moved.
Yeah, I wish I had it all in front of me in one spreadsheet as to it's been going on, but yeah, it's been pretty amazing.
Yeah, I saw on a social media yesterday, I think it was ESPN shared it, Dwayne Wade was saying his jersey collection is already pretty dated.
Yeah, that's fair.
So what else do we got on the NBA landscape?
Well, those are all the moves. We could touch on Summer League. I haven't seen that much Summer League other than it looks like it's probably going to be good enough at a Jazz roster spot, you know, be the 13th guy. The other two are showing sparks, but also looking at Evans and Willie, maybe they'll get a read. Also not made official the signings of Jeff Green and Moutier. I think Ed Davis, which gives them a little bit in the minimum to play with if they who's getting waived and who's still available.
Who was the one in that you think could get the 13th spot?
I think Brantley will get the 13th spot.
Okay.
He seems to be a young Trevor Booker type player. He's 6'7", solid body, really gets after it. I think he had 8,000 his first summer league games. He just seems like a hustle guy with good motor that, you know, will get spot minutes here and there.
And if he can come in and contribute, that's the type of guy that the Jazz, that Jazz fans, I should say, have been wanting. Because you lose Jay Crowder, everyone starts saying, well, we need to get Damari Carroll. We need to get Trevor Booker, you know. And I've heard, oh, this Brantley guy reminds me of a young Paul Millsap. But that's what you want, right? You want an energy guy who feels like he has something to prove.
Yeah. Yeah, I think Ed Davis can bring some of that. He's not quite as, say, vocal as Crowder, but he does have that toughness. And if Brantley can grow into that, great. And I was also saying earlier that the Jazz haven't finalized some contracts, so they can pick up one more guy, and maybe they do want to pick up someone a little more than the minimum who could be that enforcer type, a hard guy. I don't know who that would be, but they haven't finalized those deals yet for some reason. They're keeping their options open.
Okay. Something to keep an eye on. Mm-hmm. Well, we've had a couple minor transactions happen in the NBA since last week. The Thunder moved Jeremy Grant to the Nuggets for a first-round pick, if I remember correctly.
Yep.
Do you like that?
Now that I see what the Thunder are doing, yes. It makes Denver better. It gives the Thunder yet another draft pick. It saved them money. So, yeah, Nuggets are genuinely scary. I thought Nuggets were a bit of a house of cards last year. They had a really good record, but they had a really soft early schedule and just benefited from that. But I did not fear them in the playoffs, and the Jazz matched up pretty well with them in the regular season. Nuggets seem a lot more solid now. They didn't make that many moves, but they really shored themselves up. And I think Jeremy Grant is huge for them, because Jeremy Grant was someone I feared on the Thunder. I was like, if the Thunder would just bench Carmelo Anthony and play Jeremy Grant all the time, it would have been a lot tougher to beat them in the playoffs a couple of years ago. So I think that's a great pickup by them. It's an upgrade over Trey Lyles, who had fallen out of the rotation anyway. So, yeah.
Well, I mean, to be fair, you could have played a chair and it would have been better than Carmelo. But the other move I can think of, you just mentioned him, Trey Lyles. Marcus Morris was supposed to sign a 2-year deal with the Spurs, backed out, ended up signing with the Knicks, I believe. And the Spurs rebound, and after pulling their offer for Morris, they signed Trey Lyles. Do you think that's a good fit for him, or is he going to end up being deep on the bench and not getting any playing time anyway?
For Morris, it's good in that he's just getting more money, and the Knicks are floundering anyway, and now the Knicks have 5 power forwards, and it doesn't really matter what they're doing this year. They're just kind of getting some pieces, and I think the Knicks recognize that trade is probably how they're going to get their next big name. So good for them in collecting all these guys, most of them on 1-year deals with team options for second years. Makes them all very attractive trade pieces if some of these other teams are not really working out for them. Lyles, you know, good. Let Pops coach him. Maybe he can turn him into something. But I don't know. Lyles has had good coaches. Good coach in Utah. Good coach in Denver. Now he's going to San Antonio. Maybe San Antonio is a good culture for him to kind of wake up and recognize what he needs to do if he wants to stay on the floor. And then Morris, good for him. Get his money. But I don't see him staying long-term with the Knicks unless the Knicks get some bigger names over there. And then Morris is one of the ones that stays to compliment them.
Yeah, and you mentioned Lyles and his coaching. I thought he did fairly well in Denver, but what happened is they just seemed to have too much depth. You know, he was contributing, and then I think it was Paul Millsap that came back from an injury, and he falls out of the rotation. But when he was getting some minutes, he seemed to be able to contribute.
Yeah, they thought he was going to turn into something, but you know, Millsap came back and Trey's shooting just wasn't consistent enough. And his defense was always suspect, so he just could not stay on the floor. And Denver's one that couldn't afford too many suspect defenders. So I'm not surprised he fell out of the rotation. I do find it amusing, and I don't, you know, I like Denver fans, but they got to look at their front office and go, okay, we drafted Rudy Gobert, we drafted Donovan Mitchell, and they don't have anything to show for it. You know, Trey Lyles and Tyler Lydon are both gone. I don't even know who I think Eric Green was who they traded for Rudy Gobert. So it will just eternally amuse me.
Right, right. And I think Eric Green just signed another deal overseas. So, you know, at least these guys are still playing basketball in some capacity, I guess.
Well, there you go.
So, I'm trying to think of any other moves or any other NBA action that's kind of gone down.
You know, small stuff. Jabari Parker signed with the Hawks. Tyus Jones signed with the Grizzlies. Not much. A lot of guys stayed where they were. Isaiah Thomas, just stuff like that.
Yeah, I think that Tyus Jones pickup is good for Memphis.
Yeah, Memphis is putting together an interesting team. I mean, I do think there'll be a lottery team, but there's a lot of interesting stuff there that you could see growing and turning into something in the next year or two.
Well, it'll be interesting what that does to Grayson Allen, because Tyus Jones is a more veteran NBA point guard. He seemed to play really well whenever I watched him with Minnesota, but Ja Morant is their point guard of the future, right? Isn't he a one?
Oh yeah.
Okay. So Grayson Allen falls to the third spot on that rotation at least. So we'll see. I'm not sure if you saw. Did you see him get tossed from the summer league game?
And okay. I thought Grayson was a pretty decent keep his head down rookie here. And I remember one time he got into a scuffle and I didn't really think it was his fault, but the media's like, oh, here he is, here he goes again. But you see him doing that in the summer league and it's just like, okay, I guess he could only hold it in for so long. There's the Grayson from college that we were all worried about.
And I didn't know how to take it. Like, part of me was still wanting to defend him, like, oh, he was kind of going for the ball, but it was definitely frustration. But then you see it from a different angle and it just looks like a hard smack towards the head. I don't know. We'll see what happens, because if you do that, I feel like Grayson Allen already had a bit of a target on his back coming into the league. But if he does that in an NBA game, I just think people are going to be out for him.
Yeah.
So we'll keep a Grayson watch going, I guess.
So when you look at West versus East, I look at the West and I see seven teams that are going to be fighting for the top four seeds. Clippers, Lakers, Jazz, Nuggets, Blazers, Warriors, Rockets, they're all going to be fighting for that. I didn't miss anybody, did I? I think those are the seven best, probably.
Did you mention the Spurs, or are they one of your last pieces?
I think Spurs are going to be fighting for the eighth seed.
Okay.
The talent is just slowly dwindling. When you just look at their roster, you're thinking lottery team. The Pops is their coach, so you absolutely cannot say that. But I think the eighth seed is I think Spurs will be fighting for it. Thunder will be fighting for it. Mavericks, I think, have really improved their roster, should be fighting for it. Kings were only a few games away last year, and they still have a pretty decent roster. That's probably it. Phoenix, no way. Memphis, no way. Minnesota, it seems like they have enough talent that they should make the jump, but I just don't have faith in Minnesota. That's about how I see that going. Whereas the East, Celtics got worse. Nets this year is much better than this year because you're not going to have Durant. So you swap D'Angelo Russell for Kyrie Irving, and that is an upgrade, but they didn't really do much else to make me think they're going to be that much better. So I would say the East is Bucks and then Sixers, and then you go down to Celtics and then Raptors, obviously huge downgrade. And then you're just going to have a lot of flotsam fighting for those road team wins. Like, Pacers will still be good. They lost some pieces, but Depot will be back midseason and they should be good. But what else do they really have? Oh, someone I forgot in the West, New Orleans. I think they'll also be fighting for the eighth seed. New Orleans got such a haul for Anthony Davis and they got Derek Favors. I think New Orleans, I think they have a very good shot at having a better record this next year than they did last year.
Oh yeah, and they added JJ Redick, didn't they?
Yeah, and J.J. Redick.
Yeah, yeah. So I'm stoked to actually kind of follow the Pelicans this season.
Yeah, it'll be fun. I wish Pelicans were in the East. Oh, well.
So who else do you have in the East? Because we've got, like you said, about five teams. Who's still competing after that?
Well, let's see. Top two, Bucks and Sixers. You got to have two more home teams. Celtics, probably figure out a way to get there. Kemba's a good teammate. They lost depth with Horford leaving, but there's still enough pieces that they can probably do something. I don't know how the chemistry is going to be. I don't think Kyrie was the entire problem.
Okay.
I still wonder if there's I saw rumblings about how some people were upset that you have a longer leash to Hayward than some of the other guys, but who knows? We'll see. But Celtics, I would still put third. I would put Pacers fourth just because they're just a gritty team. Losing Boyan was huge for them, but they did pick up a lot of pieces. They got Brogdon. So there, who knows? I think I'll just put them in fourth. I don't know who else to put in fourth. I'll put Raptors fifth. Nets sixth, and they could be better or worse, who knows.
Okay.
Gosh, who else? Who else is gonna be seventh and eighth? Maybe Orlando?
No. I don't believe in Orlando at all anymore. What about Miami? Does Jimmy Butler do something down in Miami?
Yeah, Miami's good. Gosh, I just don't see anybody else. Washington is a dumpster fire. Knicks, no way. You know, Pistons, maybe.
Yeah, Pistons should be able to. They kind of got it together towards the end of the season last year. If Blake can be healthy.
Yeah. Yeah, the East just has more pit teams. Charlotte Hornets, my goodness, they swapped Kemba for Terry Rozier. They're not going to be good.
Yeah, it's going to be interesting to see some of those experiments. But I think when you look at it, the teams you've listed, basically, the East is going to be running it back in a similar fashion with just a little shakeup around the top, right?
Yeah.
Okay.
I'll say this. I think Orlando makes the playoffs next year because I don't think you can name eight better East teams.
I'm going to have to look at that roster, and then we may need to make a wager on that.
It's pretty much what they had last year.
I don't know.
Were they the seventh seed last year?
Were they?
They made the playoffs.
Oh, did they face the Raptors? I think
I think they got swept, but yeah.
Okay.
They were 42-40 last year.
Oh, I think corrected.
I think they're the seventh seed. Yeah.
Interesting. We'll have to see. I'm sure we're going to have our predictions episode when Alan's back. We'll have our, over-unders, so.
Yeah.
We'll see where things shape up there.
Yep.
What else we got? Anything more NBA agenda?
No, let's move on.
Okay. I don't think there was any additional Jazz news this week. So we'll do a couple quick hits. Wimbledon, you watched any?
I've not watched any Wimbledon.
I have not, but I did see that there is a 15-year-old phenom. What's her name? Coco Gauff, I think. I don't know if I'm saying that right. But, I mean, she made some noise, and at 15 years old, that may be the biggest story to come out of the tournament this year, you think?
Oh, yeah. Yeah. That's amazing. I mean, 15. I have a 15-year-old. it's hard to comprehend.
Well, didn't she beat Venus?
Yeah.
Okay. That's huge. So
yeah, Coco Gauff, my goodness. There's your future right there.
Okay. Only other thing I've seen on Wimbledon is I believe Serena's still in it after the round of 16, I think is where we were at. So maybe your favorite to win it there. Trying to think of what else we've had happen last week. World Cup, Women's World Cup. United States brings home the gold. 2-0 victory over the Dutch. Did you watch any of it?
Didn't watch any of it, just watched highlights. Megan Rapinoe is an excellent meme.
Oh, she's fantastic. She should run for president.
Yeah.
So, no, I didn't catch the first half. I caught most of the second half, though. Great win for them, bringing up, you know, a lot of the discussion about pay between men and women, where there's a lot of debate. You know, does it come down to the success? Does it come down to the revenue generated? How do we go about this? I think you see this also in the NBA, which we seem to focus on. You know, the WNBA is nowhere near the revenue generating machine that the NBA is. But then you see these massive contracts going out, you know, where Chris Paul is getting $47 million at the end of his career. There has to be some way to kind of balance this out in terms of pay between men and women, even with the revenue generating, don't you think? I mean, sure, you're making the money, but shouldn't there be a way to balance it to kind of show support to their female counterparts?
Yeah. I mean, when you look at the WNBA, though, and the NBA, you look at what each franchise is worth. And most of the NBA franchises are now valued at over $1 billion.
Right, right.
And, you know, since you brought it up, I'm just trying to Google and find out what are the actual values of WNBA franchises?
They got to be super low, don't you think?
Yeah, yeah. Like, if you wanted to buy a WNBA franchise, you know, what's the revenue? How famous are the people? Now I did see that, I don't remember who it was, but the new WNBA president, one of their emphases, commissioner, I mean, is going, now's the time they really need to make marketing better, because they would like to be able to pay all the players better. And the ones, you know, the ones who are like the 12th women on the roster, they should make enough that they don't have to get other jobs just to get by, you know?
Yeah, yeah. And that's kind of where I'm at.
I don't know what it is now, but like, I think two or three years ago, the minimum wage for a WNBA player, I think, was $40,000. I mean, If you made it to a professional level, you would hope you'd be making more than that. So.
Oh yeah, yeah, and to try and live off $40,000 is tough, but especially when you're traveling and you're away from home, all that, you know, is it worth $40,000 to even be in the league?
I think that's what a lot of women have to face. I think they, you know, they're concerned about that. If you're a WNBA player, but then, you know, the other 7 months out of the year, you're, I don't know, telemarketer, whatever they do, you know, you would hope there'd be more opportunities. So I do hope the new WNBA commissioner is able to figure out marketing and up their revenue. They already do get, you know, money from TV deals and some of the revenue sharing from the NBA, but basically, the NBA is supplementing the WNBA to a degree, and you want that league to eventually get popped that it can be self-sustaining and doesn't have to rely on NBA revenue to keep it afloat.
Yeah, and you'd think that with the way things are currently going in the NBA, where it's more of a shooter's league, you know, Steph set the league on fire with his shooting, you would think that the WNBA would find more success if people are a fan of that.
Yeah.
So, you know, they're not going to have all the all the alley-oops and dunks and things like that. But if you want to see, you know, a shooting contest, WNBA is really not that much different from the NBA in a lot of ways. So, but what about the U.S. women's soccer team? What do you think happens with them in this case? I know they've pressed a lawsuit to try and increase their pay, all while they have that distraction and everything else going on via social media and outrage over celebrations. They go out, they get the gold. What do you see is happening for them? What's the next step in that process?
My main question with that and the disparity of pay is what do the men's soccer team and women's soccer teams bring in revenue when they're not in these tournaments? You know,
okay,
that's the only thing I can really think of. The U.S. women's soccer team is the best soccer women's team in the world. The men's soccer team, U.S. men's soccer team, not so much. But when they're not in tournaments, what does the revenue bring in? And I would suspect that's where you got to look. If they're the same, then oh my gosh, this is awful, because you know the women's team, I want to say, makes something like a quarter or maybe even a fifth of what the men's team makes. So yeah, I would that's one where I don't feel like I have enough information to even really make a comment on. I would want to know what all those other numbers are.
Okay. Yeah. And I agree. You know, I'm kind of in the same boat. I'm like, I would love to see these women be better compensated, especially with how dominant they are. Every tournament they go into, they represent the country so well. They're extremely successful. You know, since, was it 92? They've won 4 of the World Cups. You know, I gotta pull for them, but there's a lot of information that goes into it and where you find the balance and try to make it so, you know, everyone is happy here. I don't know where that is or how you get there, but hopefully they can kind of find that ground and be happier with how they're being compensated.
Yeah.
Other quick hits. I really don't think I have much, so let's go ahead and jump over to pop culture.
Yeah. I saw a movie this week. I saw Annabelle Comes Home, which is the 3rd Annabelle movie and the 6th in the Conjuring universe. I think The Conjuring is one of the best horror movies in the past 5-10 years, however long it's been out. I like The Conjuring universe as a whole, but all the other movies, it's very hit or miss. The first Annabelle movie was awful. The second Annabelle movie was pretty good. This one is between the two. And I guess my main problem with Annabelle Comes Home is it just isn't that. It all takes place over one night, which is fine. But it felt like the movie was about halfway through before it even started trying to be scary. And the thing about the Conjuring universe is other ghosts will be introduced, and then those ghosts wind up getting their own movies. Annabelle's a spinoff of The Conjuring because she's a haunted doll that was in The Conjuring. And then the movie The Nun is a spinoff because The Nun showed up in Conjuring 2. Annabelle Comes Home has 2 or 3 ghosts that show up. They were put in there because they felt like if this movie did well enough, then they could spin off those ghosts and give them their own movies. And to be that transparent about how they're trying to expand their franchises. So, you know, it's one of those movies where it's probably okay as a rent in your home at night where you don't really care that much, and maybe you'll get a couple good jump scares. There was one scare that made the whole audience jump in the theater I was with. But, you know, other than it's fairly forgettable. So,
okay. No, I liked the comment about introducing these ghosts and them being that transparent. I thought that was great wording. So,
look at me.
Anything else? Did you happen to watch anything? Oh, on Netflix or anything like that?
You know, I watched Clue again the other day. I hadn't seen the movie since theaters.
Okay.
But I saw it was on Amazon Prime, and I went, oh, let me see if it holds up. And it does hold up. It's a fun movie. 1985. It's fun to see all that cast together. When you look at all these remakes, I had heard they're going to do a Clue remake, and Clue is a movie that I feel like is a good movie to remake. The original is decent, but the concept is there, and it's basic enough that you could do a lot with it. You could go many different directions. And so that's a remake I'm looking forward to, but I would also let people know, hey, the original's fun too. A lot of those people, you know, Tim Curry, Michael McKean, Christopher Lloyd, Madeline Kahn, just see all them doing their stuff in the 80s is pretty cool.
Okay, nice. The reason I asked, John, is I watched something last weekend, and I think everyone watched it, but I guess we can't talk about it yet. And maybe we should wait for Alan. But I binged Stranger Things very quickly last weekend.
Ah.
And I want to talk about it.
I haven't started that yet because my wife and kids were off camping for the last 6 days.
Okay.
I was with them for half of that, but I haven't had a chance to start watching that yet.
Okay. We're going to leave it alone then. Hopefully by next week, you and Alan have both watched the series. Or the season, at least, and we can talk about season 3, Stranger Things.
Okay.
I didn't watch anything else. That was my binge for the weekend. So. All right.
Yeah, I'm actually binging the last season of Curb Your Enthusiasm. The season's coming soon, and I know the last season was from 2017, but you know, I don't have HBO all the time, but I happen to have it right now, so
I'll be honest, yeah. I've never watched it.
It's good. I mean, I would say it's hit or miss, but the season where he does the Seinfeld reunion is great, and just this the whole general vibe. One of my favorite memes is when people add the Curb Your Enthusiasm ending credits to videos. I just think that's hilarious, and that's where that comes from. They're just that much more funny if you're familiar with the vibe of the show.
Okay. No, it's one that's looked interesting, but again, I'm in the boat as you. I don't have HBO, so I don't know where else to find it.
Yeah, I don't know. You'd think Amazon or Hulu or somebody would have at least the first few seasons that you could watch, but I don't know.
All right. Anything else?
No, I think that's good.
Okay. Feel free to wrap it up for us.
I actually don't remember how Alan wraps this up, but we thank everyone for listening. Please give us 5-star reviews. Hit us up on Twitter with any questions you want. Please spread the word. Please hashtag take notes. And I guess I will take us out. Bye, everybody.